Good morning, this is James Callaghan from Mindset Schools and Capital Psychotherapy. This is the third part of our series on neurodivergence. We're joined by Robert Rackley, a neurodivergent psychotherapist. You can find Robert at info@robertrackley.ie. Robert, thank you for joining me again.
Thank you for having me.
We've had some really interesting conversations over the last few weeks, and today I'd like to learn more about helping people who have neurodivergent to gain confidence, to increase the resilience. And then I have other things I want to ask you just about helping to support the child as well.
Okay.
But one of the things that I've heard a lot about, and you can help me understand this one, is ableism, stigma and shame, which probably is part of having the neurodivergence.
Yeah, so this is a really tough one because society has looked down on divergence, and autistic people, ADHDers, we know that the stigma attached to this, and what parents then develop is an idea of autism, an idea of ADHD. And with that, then when it comes for a time that their child is recognized with a difference, it means that society has put an enormous amount of shame on what it's like to be different.
Yeah.
Now, if we think about, you said the word ableism. Ableism is very much taken from the disability world. And the disability world is very much used to what ableism feels and looks like. So that's where, you know, someone with a disability is supposed to be able to do what a person who's fully able can do.
Yes.
And then everything is built around the ablest person. And so if we think of that related to neurodivergence, ADHD and autism, then what you have is a society that's built up around what autism should look like or what ADHD should look like. And if you don't fit that bill, which most of us don't, and what it should look like, because there's a viewpoint of it that's quite negative, then you end up with somebody who has something inside that cannot be seen.
Yes.
That means that they're probably going to get very little acknowledgement, credit, allowances for having that difference. But what the child will learn over time, unfortunately, is to internalise all of these. I should be able, I need to. And that's going to really damage their self-esteem, because unless they identify that there's nothing wrong with being different, then you're going to end up with a huge amount of internalised ableism. And that leads to an awful lot of guilt and shame about things that happen quite naturally as a divergent person.
Yeah. And I think there's I hear a lot more now about screenings for ADHD and ASD. Do you think with more people talking about this, that it's going to reduce stigma, or has it reduced stigma at all, do you think?
Yeah, so things are improving. It's definitely getting better, but we've so far to go. If you put in autism into Google, you're going to see a view that the world has. Or if you put ADHD into Google, what you'll typically see is a child behaving. And in bad behaviour. But ADHD and autism comes with an enormous amount of strengths and abilities, and they're kind of squashed because of all the mental health difficulties, because of how society has told us to rear children who are autistic and have ADHD. So what you have then is a societal problem,
mm-hmm.
not an internal problem with the child, who unfortunately goes on to an adult and ends up with this kind of, I need to hide the fact that I'm autistic, I need to hide the fact that I have ADHD. And that's what happens. A lot of people don't come out and say, I am autistic or I have ADHD, because they feel that there's some sort of shame attached to that, which is quite sad.
Yeah. I know from speaking to you that some of your work involves then taking the parents and speaking to them about neurodivergency and, you know, really give them a clear picture. And then I assume at some stage then the child is also involved in the conversation. That must be quite powerful for the child and the family to understand what's going on.
You get children, teenagers saying, finally.
Yeah.
The child will ultimately, and into teenage and then into adult, it'll have a sense of being different, but just won't have words for that difference. And when that's done in a strength, realistic but positive way, this comes with difficulty, so we have to acknowledge that. But there is another way of doing this, and there's another way of looking at it. When parents hear that, when the child or teenager hears that, it starts to get them thinking, this could be different. So there's hope, because the opposite of hope is hopeless. And unfortunately, parents end up in the hopeless section with their kids, where they're like, okay, I'm in for life now. What does this mean for the future? And neurodivergent people can go on and be highly, highly successful in life.
Yeah. I think strength base is really important. And I've heard the term, people with ADHD have got fast minds and bicycle brakes or something, where the mind's always going really fast. But I like the bit about the fast mind. I mean, very clever. And I think that's something that has to be, you know, also spoken about. So I like the way that's also, you know, looked at. And then I'm just thinking then, I suppose, as a child or adolescent gets older, then is there certain jobs or careers that might also be more advantaged that they might strive in?
Yeah, so if we take something like ADHD, an ADHD brain it's very, it likes fun, it likes nice things. If you put an ADHD child into a classroom and teach it something boring, the child's going to wander away in its mind. It will start to look elsewhere and will get quite uncomfortable and distracted in their own brain. If you take an autistic person or someone with ADHD and they have one thing that they're very good at, and you focus towards that one thing and build strengths around that, you have a child that can operate with an ability that most people can't do on the planet. That one thing that they become totally engrossed in. And if that becomes career, for example, now you're into a system that will love what it's doing. Mental health consequences will go down. And that person can go on and be famous if they want. They can play sports.
Yeah.
They can be musicians or whatever they want to be. But if we keep extinguishing that ability and say, okay, you're not passing maths, or you're failing English, and you're failing, now we're looking at deficits. And that takes the child further away than from what it could be.
Yeah, so focusing on the strengths and supporting them to do what they feel that the best thing they're able to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
Amazing. Because I know a lot of people who are business and entrepreneurs, you know, sometimes they get to a stage where they might come in and have a talk with therapists. And you often feel that a lot of their childhood or symptoms will be that of neurodivergence. And then they might go and get tested, and that might be another part of their journey to helping them in another way.
Yeah, and the statistics around this and the number of entrepreneurs that have ADHD is phenomenal. It's a massive, massive, on the planet, it's a massive percentage. The ability to see things different. We need these brains on the planet. This is very good for humanity, to have brains that can look at things in a different way. If you support that difference, then you're going to have something special. If we keep getting people with these abilities and say, well, you can't do maths, you can't do geography, well, then we're putting them into, you know, you're not good enough.
Yeah.
And that's going to damage the child, its adulthood.
Something that I hear a lot is the word imposter syndrome. And I get this from a lot of clients might say that they're in a really good job because they worked really hard for it, but they still show up day in, day out, and they feel like they shouldn't belong when they shouldn't be there. Is that something that would be part of the neurodivergence?
If you think of that, you know, from the beginning, a child learning, I can't sit still like the other person. I can't learn like the other person. I am different. And if you think of that over and over and over again, that repeated cycle of a negative viewpoint of what you're doing, then as that goes into teenage, as that goes into adulthood, you're looking at somebody who doesn't feel good enough, who's comparing themselves to how society does things, and they're not matching it. They're not able to do it at a higher level. So that by the time that person then goes into a workplace, they're quite vulnerable in that workplace because they might feel not good enough. They might feel like they're not as good as the people around them.
Yeah.
And that vulnerability can often mean that people become people pleasers, but also ultimately that they're not as good at the job as somebody else, and that simply might be thinking that it goes back to childhood rather than it being true.
Yeah. Is keeping friendships and being able to, you know, surround yourself by someone who's quite similar or has similar interests, would that be something that neurodivergents might struggle with? Do they eventually find people who kind of, in a way, vibe with them?
Yeah, so yeah, your tribe as a neurodivergent person is really important. So sitting with other people who are neurodivergent is probably the best. If you think it's a child, if you can get a child to sit with somebody who has the same interests as them, they're going to gel. But there's also, there can be a lot of pressure socially for neurodivergent people. A lot of neurodivergent people don't require lots of friends.
Yeah.
So it's quality friendships, not quantity, because sometimes there can be conversations that aren't deep that neurodivergent people really struggle with. And it's the depth of conversation that really about things that they're interested in that grows friendships.
Yeah, of course. Just come back to parents and to schools. If you were to leave, I suppose, we're finishing up on this last episode. If you leave parents and if you leave teachers with one message or a message, what do you think we should, what the message that we'd want to share with them?
So the key, hopefully what you've heard is a different, positive, realistic version of what neurodivergence is. And that understanding and that viewpoint changes everything. So we need to remember that neurodivergent people are not broken. We simply have differences. And those differences mean that neurodivergent people look at the world in a very unique way. If we can see it as neurodivergence, that there isn't anything wrong, but that society and how we built it up is not supporting those individual brains, now we're starting to look at things in the right way. Because if we go strengths and we look at it from that point of view and as a society, then maybe we can bring up that child in a different way that goes into adulthood differently without the mental health consequences that are currently going on. And with neurodivergent people, if you support neurodivergent people in the right way, we thrive. You will have a child who will absolutely grow. If we don't recognise the divergence and we point towards the differences and the struggles, then we're going to end up with children who develop later in life low self-esteem. So the key to this is that neurodivergent people are not broken and there's nothing wrong. It's a societal problem. And if we support the right environment for that child, then it's going to be a totally different outcome.
Thank you so much. In all of my engagements with you, Robert, I've learned so much. And I think, you know, as a therapist, and I think other parents out there, if they have children who have neurodivergency, I think you'd be one of the first people who they should contact. I think your knowledge on this topic is amazing. So thank you so much for coming and joining us for the last couple of weeks.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate it.